Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to watch movies and series and talk about them with my friends that work here. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hi.
How are you, Cole?
I'm fantastic. It's a good morning.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You got some nice shorts on. We'll talk about that
Thank you.
Moment.
Yeah.
How are you, Perrin?
I'm great. I'm just in awe of Cole's
muscles.
I don't see them often enough. You know, it's always jeans.
Yeah.
So I'm loving a dash of color, some nice pink shorts.
This is why I kind of like when I put my shorts on, because I always get a... Dude, you have big calf muscles.
I'm like, you do have nice calf muscles.
Thank you.
Yeah, you should be in the movie Challenges.
Oh.
Directed by Luca Guadagnino.
We're going to talk about it in a moment. Yeah. Hello, everyone, and thank you for wandering into our video store. It's lovely to have you.
Yeah.
So one thing before we get started is I want to make a little shop announcement.
Oh.
Okay.
I didn't know we could do that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
This little button here.
Oh, is that what that does?
Yeah.
And then
everyone in the shop can hear what we have to say.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, let's do it. Attention all customers. This is just to let you know that our good friends over at Duos Wine are running a special promotion with us. If you don't know about Duos Wine, it is fantastic wine that comes in a box. Hence the name. And you can go over to duos.wine. And if you put in the promo code VideoStoreDuos, all one word, you can get 15% off your order. But you have to choose to do the collection at the Bioscope. So over here at the Bioscope, we've got a place where you can come and collect your Duos wine so that you can save on shipping. All right, so that is Video Store Duos to get 15% off your order of really good wine over at Duos.wine.
Yeah, we watched Challenges last week, which was incredible. It is now in cinemas, including the Bioscope, and I really want us to get into it. Because I think it's something really worth chatting about. But let's get back to Cole's legs. My uncovered legs only come out like near a beach.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I feel bad for them because when they do get exposed, they're very...
They're good legs, right?
I like my legs.
Yeah.
I've got no issues with my legs. What do you think about your legs?
I fucking love my legs. It's the one thing about myself I absolutely adore. Like, everything else, I'm like, ugh, you know, that's fine, whatever. But my legs, oof. Summer comes out.
But you being serious?
Dude, I have great legs. I don't want to take my pants off in the cinema right now because I'm wearing jeans. But,
do you know who really has great legs is Gad from the video store. I think you still need to meet him. I haven't done a shift with him yet.
I've seen him around. Selling sweets and
He was
stuff.
A taekwondo like junior black belt.
Oh, sick.
He's done zero exercise since, but he's got the most like muscular legs.
Perfect legs, yeah.
Yeah. But speaking of perfect legs and great
that
bodies.
Is so weird.
Let's talk about Challenges.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect bodies.
It's very much a bodies, very tangible, very sexy film.
Yeah, it is.
Sexy, fucking hell.
It is, right? And without it being explicit.
Yeah. No, exactly. There's no sex scenes
and
at all.
Obviously,
there's
like
no technical
exactly
sex scenes. Yeah.
Not sexy. Sorry. Making noises with my hoodie, but not sexy in an obvious way.
Yeah, 100%.
I feel like sultriness and sexiness happen in a very predictable pattern in filmmaking.
But that's also the power of Luca Guadagnino.
Yes.
So like his films are always, he's got, what I love about Luca is we're on first name basis. His films are so textured, like visually and also like character driven wise, where he doesn't need to have things overly sexy. I mean, a lot of his films do have a lot of sexiness to it. I mean, obvious ones, Call Me By Your Name, Suspiria's fucking sexy film.
Yeah, it is.
And
they play
Bones
with,
and all, Jesus,
they
all
play
sexy
with
films.
Sex as well. Like they use it as an instrument where like, so quick, let's do a quick back of the box because I think I've got a good way to encapsulate this film.
Okay.
Yeah.
The whole film is a game of tennis.
100%, yeah.
Yes.
So from the moment the movie starts, a tennis match is about to get underway. Mm. You've got the umpire able to go, on your left, I've got this. On my right, I've got this person. Mm. And the game starts. And as the game starts, this camera zooms well down the middle. With and the it music. Focuses and the music kicks in. It sets the tone.
Yeah, it's like we're not watching. Or this is about the tennis players, but it's also not about the players.
Because it zones.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah, because it zones in. In the middle is Zendaya.
Yeah.
Okay. So it sets up the fact that they're these three people.
Yeah.
And the film itself then, and we're going to try our best not to give too much spoiler away. That's the, always the focus, especially within the first week of release.
Yeah, for sure.
Here at the video store. But the film itself is this love triangle between three people. And over the course of this tennis match, we go backwards in time to understand what's at stake in this exact game.
Yes.
And
there is literally something at stake.
There's incredible amounts. As the pieces get filled in, you go back 13 years, then you go forward, then you go back, then you go to that one time, then you go to the night before. I don't want to give too much away.
Yes.
But by the end of this film, you've got this particular picture that's now been painted for you about the incredible, complex, and just nuanced relationship between these three people. The two guys that are playing tennis and Zendaya, her character.
Yeah.
So it's lovely.
That's what I love about a good love triangle. When it's done well, every single relationship in that triangle is, you can understand the dynamic between everyone.
But that's what I'm saying about like Luca, his texture to his characters in every film.
Yes.
Like, even though he didn't write this one. So, fun fact,
I was going to give the fun fact, Perrin.
Over to you, Cole.
Thank you. Fun fact, eh? Screenwriter Justin Kuritzikis, I think, is the husband of Celine Song.
Yeah, who wrote Past Lives. And directed that.
Okay. Yes.
So, like, that's what I love about, like, it's just very interesting insight into their relationship as well. Because I know Past Lives is, like, semi-autobiographical of her experience with her husband.
Really?
And apparently, yeah, so I don't recall them ever being tennis players. So, but like, sorry, over to you, Carl.
Okay, because I saw some memes that actually had
the
challenges and past lives compared, and someone said something like, if you know, you know.
Yeah, or three tickets to challenges.
Okay, but let's just touch on the director for a moment. So as you said, perhaps before this, his biggest film was Call Me By Your Name, which was Timothy Chalamet, and that was...
should have won the Oscar.
Who won that year?
Gary Oldman for wearing... heavy prosthetics. Look, I love Gary Oldman. I love Gary Oldman.
We
He's
all
amazing
love Gary Oldman.
In Darkest Days.
But it was also one of those moments where you award their career and not just the performance.
It's a legacy Oscar. Yeah.
Because you have to give Gary Oldman a fucking Oscar, dude.
Instead of Chalamet.
Yeah, I felt Chalamet
should have
won.
He should have won. Was he nominated?
Yeah, he was.
Like,
best actor,
no actor in that lineup. Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis was there that year for Phantom Thread.
I loved Phantom Thread.
God, dude, Jesus. No other... actor, well, I'm being hyperbolic. Okay. It's a joke in Jonathan's show that no one gets, which is horrifying. But that final shot of Timothy crying at the fireplace.
Oh, dude,
over the credits.
With Sufjan Stevens playing in the background.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
You're just like, it's one of the most heart-wrenching things because you can see the heartbreak of first love in your life.
I rewatched it the other day and in sparkling 4K. Still a great film, man.
And you know what I hate about dating the gays?
What?
And to be fair, it's people that read books a lot.
Okay.
And you know people that read books a lot that are book people automatically assume that the film's going to be shit because it's based on the book.
Yeah.
So a film can never be better than the book, which has been false numerous times.
Yeah.
Right? The Shining. Oh, sorry. But anyways, Call Me By Your Name's book is really problematic.
Yeah.
Because the kid is 15.
Changed the age slightly in the movie.
So he's a little bit older in the film.
17 and 24, I think, yeah.
But they, like...
still weird.
None of them like Call Me By Your Name, so they're not going to watch the film. And then they judge me for liking the film.
Yeah, I get you.
And I'm like, excuse me, that film is a fucking masterpiece.
It is. It's
and
a
then
masterpiece.
He said to me, the one ex said, it seems like it's a straight guy's idea of what a romantic holiday or a gay holiday would be like the ideal kind of experience, right? It's an outsider's perspective. Yeah. And I'm like, well, if you watch the movie, you'd know that it's a bisexual awakening. I'm just saying.
And also, Luca Guadagnino is a gay filmmaker. So,
Is he homosexual as a person?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But, sorry, going back to tying it to challenges, like, that's one thing also that, like, Luca's films always have is that his characters never feel, like you said, with the sexiness of it all, it never feels forced to just cause conflict. Like, when we see what's at stake, there's so much at stake. And that final, so throughout the movie, we intercut back to this big tennis match.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. And what the movie does so well, like you guys said, is the introduction of stakes, not just for like friendships, but relationships, but like careers. Everything is riding on this one game.
Yeah. And you almost don't know that until...
Yeah.
All those pieces get put
together.
Exactly.
And when all those pieces come together and we stay with the final tennis match, just the level of like, I mean, there's so much slow-mo where you'd be like, is this a Zack Snyder film?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But like...
the accent?
Yeah. is this Snyder? But like the slow-mo, like one thing with slow-mo is that it's got to be used... If you're going to use it a lot, use it well. Like, actually introduce some stakes to it, right? Well, so, with challenges, the slow-mo there, it feels... There's a line where they talk about where Zendaya's like, oh, she talks about playing a tennis match with someone else, and she mentions that, like, in that moment, we're in love, you know?
Yeah.
We're the only two people in the world that
exist.
There's
only a small amount of this game is actually tennis. The rest is something else.
It's like a spiritual bond, right? And I felt that in that whole tennis match.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yes.
Between not just Josh O'Connor and Mark Faist, but with Zendaya as well.
Yes.
And like the editing in this movie is so fucking good.
And just, it's a point to mention that what you do every day when not working at the video store is edit.
Yeah, I edit.
So it's very cool that was something that you could appreciate.
100%.
Because, and it wasn't just slow-mo.
Yeah, it wasn't just
there was
exactly.
There was moments where you're the tennis ball.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the camera is moving across this court like you're a tennis ball to just show you how crazy and unhinged that moment was. I mean, I don't think we could have watched it. That shot for longer than we did, but it just gave you this like chaos.
Yeah, and the music as well. That
I mean, of
course,
I want to talk about the music. I want to go into the music, but before we get into the music, just to speak specifically about the actors.
Yeah, for sure.
I think the biggest and the most obvious name there is Zendaya, who up until now, even though like in Euphoria it was a adult themed show, she was still a kid.
Yeah, teenager. Yeah.
And she was still being a teenager in Spider-Man. She's got a backpack and she's a school kid.
Yeah,
so like we've seen her as this kid where now this is a movie where like she's a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Like she's not only a mom, she's more of a grown up. But of course now you're seeing her in a sort of more sexualized way. Yeah. One of the first shots you ever see of her is her in her underwear getting ready in the morning.
Yeah.
Yes.
From behind.
Yeah.
So it's like immediately we are going to see her as this like beautiful.
She's a woman. Yeah.
Right. Beautiful like sexual object.
Yeah.
But in a way.
Tasteful
that,
way.
That tasteful.
She's the object of design narratively is what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's one thing as well. Sorry, back to harp on Luca. He's also, his gaze is really interesting. Like he's got a very interesting perspective in terms of how he looks at sexuality, because he's looking at Zendaya as a beautiful woman, but he's also looking at these guys as beautiful men.
You see the
chest hair,
the blonde guy, what's his name?
Mark Faist.
You see him roll around in bed in sort of like underwear before you see Zendaya.
There's that. Did you guys pick up on the moment where he turned around and it felt like he was wearing a jockstrap? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But he turns around and his bum is like facing up on the bed, and she walks past the bed, and I think he was trying to solicit her to bed. And she's like, get up, we're going to go play tennis.
And that's interesting. That's very interesting.
Because I don't know, I was looking at the bum personally.
Sure. This is cold. Fucking hell.
And I was like, he's asking for it. That's what he's doing. And then she walks past the bed and goes, nope. Let's go play tennis.
But that also puts the whole their relationships into perspective. I mean,
oh yeah, totally.
Because like her character is I mean, like it's shown in the trailer, so I can say this, right? But like she gets an injury, right?
Oh, is it shown in the trailer?
Yeah, okay, cool. The second trailer, he's like, I want you to be my coach and stuff like that, right?
Yes.
So like she's clearly trying to live her career through this
Absolutely.
Guy. And yeah. it's shown in that final tennis match yeah. as well. Like, mm-hmm. and yeah, like the music. I mean,
yeah,
come
let's chat about the music. So, so for those who don't know, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross
yeah, Nine Inch Nails,
were
yeah.
in a band in the 90s and the 2000s called Nine Inch Nails, which, if you don't know them, it's kind of important that you understand where they fit in the world of music.
Yeah,
they were the sort of masters of this particular genre.
Industrial,
which didn't necessarily last, but it was a moment in time like grunge. Mm. And what it was like dark, quite sinister electronic music, not happy yeah. Fatboy Slim
yeah.
you know yeah. Dance music. When you think of dance music, you think of happiness.
Mm.
This was industrial is the perfect word to describe it, just like grunge was yeah. the perfect word to describe yeah. some of those Nirvana songs. And they have seen a second wind in their lives as being scorers for film.
Two-time Academy Award-winning
yeah.
composers now.
Very yeah. famously doing a lot of stuff with a guy like David Fincher. Mm. So things like The Social Network. There was a reason why you felt uneasy throughout that whole thing. What are some of the other ones?
What was their second Oscar?
Soul with John Baptiste.
Oh, shit.
What? Did they yeah. do Soul?
Dude, so...
Okay, well, then I'm kind of negating my argument here. So that was such a happy film.
It's so funny when Soul won, because I'm a huge Nine Inch Nails fan yeah. as well. When Soul won, I'm like, imagine telling some fucking angry teenager in 1994 who just listened to Downward Spiral, like, Trent Reznor is going to win an Academy Award for a Disney movie.
Yeah. And yeah. they're going to be like, no. No. He would never do that, man.
That's interesting. Okay, so I didn't even know he was involved in that. But
he's actually won there one award away from winning the EGOT.
Really?
They won for Watchmen as well, which is a fucking crazy score.
They won the Emmy
the
for Watchmen.
TV show, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Fucking hell, dude.
Well, amazing dudes. And so when you speak of Downward Spiral, which was one of their more famous yeah, albums, yeah. it's worth mentioning something very particular, which is the fact that it is this electronic music.
Yeah.
It is dark to some to a large yeah. degree, but I'm just yeah. talking specifically
yeah,
now about
sure.
Challenges.
Got you.
Challenges has this incredible score that gives it this energy. It's so close to being cheesy.
Mm. It's like 90s
very
90s
close.
90s kind of
techno.
Techno.
Yeah.
It's techno. I kept on thinking it was breakbeat, but
yeah,
that's
yeah.
like
it feels like techno. Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
one of Nine Inch Nails' most famous songs.
I loved you mentioned this afterwards because I couldn't stop thinking about
had
it.
Had this very unforgettable line,
yeah,
which was "I want to fuck you like an animal."
Closer, yeah,
yeah. This song Closer.
Yeah. I want to feel you from the inside.
So yeah. this is very important because that says it's dark, it's industrial, it's crazy,
yes.
it's intense, but it's sexy.
Yeah,
there's something sexy
there's something
about
primal
the,
about that.
It
song.
Is primal,
that is
100%.
And so that's why these guys are the perfect people for this kind of movie, where although it's tennis,
yeah,
where it's kind of pristine, you know, white clothing, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
like
yeah, it's like dirty,
but,
it's
but
filthy.
There's
yeah.
something that's primal about it, yeah. and their music is laced with this sexiness.
Mm.
And I think that's an important thing to mention, that you're talking, you know, this soundtrack's made by a guy that says, I want to fuck you like an animal. You know what I mean?
And I kind of like to bow tie these two notes that you've made.
Yeah.
You spoke about his gaze.
Yeah.
Which, like, in any discussion, when you look at a gaze, a male gaze, it's objectifies in a very
That's
sexual G-A-Z-E. Way.
Yeah, I was about to say, just to stipulate, we're talking
gaze.
About G-A-Z-E.
A male gaze.
Which
yeah.
is which is just to...
Two nouns? It's a compound noun. It's a for male.
We're talking about, like, the look of the camera, the way the camera
yes.
moves. It represents how we look or are staring, how we're staring at the character. The best example
exactly.
is if you want to objectify a woman, the camera starts at her ankles and works
so think
the way
of
up,
Megan
you know?
Fox on that bike in Transformers.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. And that just feels like crudely, distastefully sexual.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
where
yeah.
you know what its intent is.
Yeah.
But Luca seems to have this acceptance that we are primal and
oh,
we do desire the other, the body, right?
Yeah.
but it's done in a way where you say someone is beautiful, not sexy.
Yeah.
But there is that kind of thing to it, but it doesn't feel blatantly objectified. It feels like it understands us.
Exactly,
and then these guys with their soundtrack are underpinning this pace and this like sultry energy to this desire where this, like under this tennis game.
And it's not even, it's not set in the 90s. So there wasn't, you know,
it's 2019.
The techno wasn't about putting it in a particular timestamp.
Yeah.
It was just about
the genre's
this very particular, yeah, like kind of color. You know, when someone speaks, what's the condition where music has color to you?
I can't remember.
Synesthesia.
Some people sort of see music as having color.
I'm
like,
so impressed I remember
this
that.
I think it is, yeah.
Synesthesia,
know,
yeah.
Yeah, it's that. You know, this gives it, this gives it color. But let's talk about the actors.
We've said that five times. So Mike Faced, who before this was When You're a Jet, riffing West Side Story.
He was my favorite, one of my favorite performers in that.
Yeah, dude.
He was in Steven Spielberg's West Side Story.
So good.
That's right.
So good, dude.
That's right, he was.
Him and Ariana DeBose? What's
yes.
her name?
Yeah, oh, they
those two stole the show for me.
When you're a jet, you're a jet all the way.
It's so good, man.
We've got it. Have you seen the postcard we've got in the gift shop?
Oh no, of the original West.
The original one with the subtitle on, where the subtitle says "Tough Guy Finger Snapping," and we sell that like screen grab as a postcard at the bioscope. Okay, he was that, and then the other guy
is Josh O'Connor.
So he was in The Crown.
He was the
he was Prince Charles.
He was Prince Charles in The Crown. Mm. So is he naturally British, or did he?
He is British.
Yeah, I think he's naturally.
Oh, so
British.
He put on an American accent for Challengers.
Yeah. So he
was good.
I first saw him in God's Own Country.
Okay,
I haven't seen that.
That's a great. Me and Cole were talking casually the other day about happy queer movies. Like, well, not happy queer movies, but queer movies that have happy endings.
Yeah,
because they tend to be quite tragic. Yeah.
that's one of the God's Own Country is such a great film. I think it was on South African Netflix for a while. I don't know if it's still there.
God's Own Country.
Yeah, it's so good. It's about two farm boys and
Premise.
Yeah, and no, but it's fantastic. Like Josh O'Connor's character is like hiding that he's gay, obviously, and this foreigner comes in. I think he's Romanian. I'm half remembering this, but he's a foreigner and he's a little more in tune with his sexuality and something like a bond happens and it's lovely film.
Well, I want to say, Cole, how does this movie remind you of Road to El Dorado?
So I was saying to Perrin when we walked out the cinema that we've got to do like a side-by-side comparison of the shots of, what was her name? Was it Tully or something in Road to El Dorado.
I can't remember.
Her and the two
boys
from Road to El Dorado next to each other, and do a frame by frame comparison of the three in this movie on the bed. Because it's the same fucking thing. It is the same thing.
Without the making out.
When you're a closeted bisexual watching Road to El Dorado, an animated movie, and it's Innocence. I mean, that is a sexual movie,
100%.
But you're sitting there going, like, this is amazing. This is the greatest thing I've ever fucking seen.
They've adapted it to live action.
Yes, they've adapted it to live action.
So when you were watching, it's a Disney movie or DreamWorks.
DreamWorks.
It's a DreamWorks animation, The Road to El Dorado, which came out in like the 90s or 2000s.
It's like 98 or 2002, somewhere around there.
You were picking up some bisexual
energy
from that movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because they're vying for one girl, aren't they?
Yes, they're both vying for the same girl. It's the same premise. It's a great double bowl.
Okay.
You should do Road to El Dorado. Just say bisexual day. For bisexual visibility day, put on Road to El Dorado and Challengers back to back.
2000, yeah.
When is bisexual visibility day?
I have no idea. That is Russell, do it.
Okay.
Curated by Cole Matthews.
Yeah, basic. It's like the most basic curation ever.
Lovely. I think more will come up as we keep chatting, but I think let's move on to some other stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. You finished Baby Reindeer.
Phenomenal show. Did you guys watch it?
Mm-mm.
You started.
I've started it. I certainly am intrigued. I do tend to avoid the movies and the shows where things just get worse and worse and worse and worse.
Things do get worse.
I know.
And
I must say, I'm I don't know whether it's my sensibility or what I do day to day or what I kind of need from a, you know, easy watching, but I tend to avoid the ones where it's like, oh, it's just getting worse.
Yeah.
You experience shock quite viscerally in movies. When I, Like, there's a jump scare in challenges that I went to. We all know what it is. Yeah. There's like a cut that freaks you out. Russ like physically like convulses and holds my shoulder and he's like,
Kira,
so I can't imagine something like
I spent the majority of Talk to Me nestled under Cole's like armpit.
You're a little baby bird and he was, you know, bringing you back to health.
I'm a little baby reindeer.
Yeah. No, Kira's the same. She freaks out like in challenges as well. There was moments where she like jumped.
Yes.
And like your friend Claudia?
Yeah.
Yeah. She just, I heard her laughing at Kira. She was like, what are you doing?
What is baby reindeer?
So baby reindeer, I just want to make sure I get the names right.
I actually don't know what the premise is.
So essentially the premise is, I mean essentially, it's about a struggling comedian, right? Uh-huh. He works as a bartender. And then one day a woman comes in. She's like super sad and upset. And all he does is give her a cup of tea on the house. And this woman becomes like literally 350 hours of voice notes later.
Loads of emails.
Yeah, 100, like 200,000 emails later, like she becomes his stalker, obsessive stalker. And it's such a fucking, like, at first you're like, this is a funny concept, you know, like a crazy woman who's obsessed with him, whatever. And like, he's a struggling comedian. There's lots of like humor peppered in, but the deeper it goes in, it just gets darker and darker and darker.
Because he discovers that she has a history of being
serial
a stalker. But he still sort of entertains her in a particular way. Or there are still these moments.
Yeah.
And like one
and
time.
And you find out why. Yeah.
Yeah. And why this is so interesting is that, because this is one of those shows, once every 6 months or so, there's a show that everyone's talking
about.
It's
like explodes. Yeah.
Or a movie, right? So like Saltburn was earlier this year. Yeah. Or like Wednesday, right. It was like a real like dinner party bri show you talk about. Baby Reindeer is one of those because there's so much more to grab onto. One of those things is that the guy who's the lead,
it's based on a true story.
It happened to him.
Sure.
So he put on this like
fucking crazy.
He put on this like one person show about
it. On West End.
He like developed it. I think it was at the Edinburgh Festival. Maybe be misquoted.
Yeah, started there.
But he created this thing. Mm. And so it's now sent everyone around him or people stalking to find who that person was.
Which I think is...
And he's tried to say, guys, that's not the point. Like, please don't
bring that up.
Please don't do this. Like, it's maybe some things are real, but I've made a lot of it fictitious. But there is one person who has come out to say, well, you know, everyone's badgering me.
Yeah.
Because I was the person, but I don't. And she's suing Netflix right now.
Yeah, so she's
because with one
my
of
goodness.
One of the biggest standout things that comes out in
the show,
the reporting of her suing Netflix was that she was upset about how fat the woman was.
Yeah,
that portrayed her.
Yeah, so she's like, oh, like I saw that.
I'm
as
not
well.
Nearly as fat or something. Or like, I'm.
Oh
I'm,
my goodness,
I'm
what?
Good looking. She
but
says.
Do you know what's, do you know what's funny is she also said in her statement, she's like, oh, he was the one obsessed with me and stuff. And literally everything this woman is saying is exactly what she says in the show as well. So
oh
like,
my god!
And the thing is, like the brilliant thing about the show as well is that like, so the creator, Shaman, you can see there's like this show. Like, obviously, he...
You can see the pain in his eyes when he's acting.
Yeah, because, like, you must watch the... If you ever finish it, you must watch the making of afterwards. It's a 12-minute feature, right? And he talks about how, like, there were moments where he forgot his lines because this actress in front of him was embodying everything about this person that, like, traumatized him. And he was just like...
Fuck, dude.
And the thing is, like, what's interesting about the show as well is... And he says it himself. He says... It's a very different stalking show, like a stalker movie premise show.
It's not obvious. Yeah. It's one thing if it's just someone who's badgering you and you think you can just tell them no.
Yeah, it's not dressed to kill. It's not anything like that, right? So like with this, like it's one of the most like eye-opening like films / TV, art, whatever, where it really puts you in the feet of someone being stalked and why they would allow it to continue happening, why they would allow to humor it.
And the little moments where, that door gets opened for that person to come in further.
Yeah.
And like one of them is, for example, is not even his fault. Someone else takes his phone and then says, sends her a text.
Yeah.
And he's like, what? What have you done?
Yeah.
Like, you have no idea what you've just done. And of course that gives her more reason
Ammo, And the thing is, like, it's like, it's a very hard watch. I'm not going to tell people it's a fun, you know, funny show and stuff like that. And I've seen people making...
go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, and I see some people making certain jokes about certain aspects of the show that feel in very poor taste because of what has happened in the show and what happens to the main character and, you know, his history and stuff. And I'm not giving anything away, but episode 3 is when it starts to get really dark. Episode 4 is one of the hardest... It's 43 minutes, so let's round it off to an hour. It's one of the hardest hours of TV I've ever seen.
Really?
Serious?
Like, really, difficult to watch. There's a disclaimer in the beginning. Because it's also a film about... You very rarely see films or TV shows that deal with sexual abuse or sexual assault towards men, right?
Right.
And I mean, it's an important discussion as well because it does happen.
Yes.
You know, and... like,
and what that looks like, because it might not be obvious.
The trauma that follows that, the toxic masculinity involved with that.
Yeah,
right. Like, it's such a cleverly written, and also the most important part about the show is it's so sincere. There's a monologue that he gives in episode 6. It is one of the best monologues I've ever seen of any movie or TV show. And it's the reason why is because it feels real. You can
see a sincerity. Interesting.
It's hot. It's like gut-wrenching and like
and that's when the magic of theater probably it's shines gorgeous, through because that monologue was no doubt or some version of it was 100%. In his show and that's when, you know, it's not about stand-up comedy, it's a very well-crafted piece of theater.
Yeah, definitely.
And then that's interesting that then turns into a show and will make its way into the show.
Another thing as well, like it's interesting how this will also, like, I saw a brief article where they're talking about how internet sleuths can be some of the most annoying people in the world where they're like, they think they have all the answers or whatever, right? And with this, like, I feel bad for the guy because you touched on it briefly where, like, people are already prying into his private life now. They're like, oh, this is the person that did X, Y, and Z to him. And he's like, comes out and says, well, guys, like, not all of the show is exactly how it happened. For legal reasons, I can't do it because I'm A, protecting people, or B, protecting myself, or C, sometimes it helps the story move along.
Exactly.
But you can tell when there are moments where it is real to him, like the monologue, where, like, that all happened to him and he's fucking unloading and it's just... heart-wrenching. And if you ever bite the bullet, Cole, like it's only 7 episodes, most of them are like 30 minutes long,
so it's
bingeable.
It is easy enough to binge, but I don't think anyone really even expected it to be that big, and so that's why maybe there is a lesson in what you put out there, but in the same breath it's like that's where the good art comes from.
And
these incredible moments and how real life can write itself into and take inspiration into a film or into a TV show. Some of the things that happen, you just can't.
I'm
just thinking of last week's chat with Brett and Hilton from the film Just Now, Jeffrey. This moment in history where for a brief period there was porn broadcasted on SABC.
SABC, I remember Mnet and ETV.
This was a moment that made news where someone broadcasted porn out on SABC. This
like
was
like a Tyler Durden moment.
It was brief. It was for a few minutes. And of course, it was at that point in history in the 80s when millions of people were watching.
Yeah, censored. Yeah.
And you wonder what the story was behind that. And in the film Just Now, Jeffrey, there's a point where they... I don't want to give too much away, but there's a point where they do that. And it just becomes a fun part of this plot.
Yeah.
And
the zeitgeist. Yeah.
But it was them growing up in South Africa in the 80s going, I wonder what happened there.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
I want to know more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that's what they were thinking. Like, I wonder what the story was that led to this brief moment when porn was broadcast on conservative South Africa.
Yeah, it
like
sounds,
heads were rolling.
That must have been a form of protest.
Yeah,
that's crazy. That's
what they, you know, you could think that. What they thought is that perhaps it was a mistake.
Yeah.
Someone busy copying illegally and pressed the wrong button. Who knows? But it's just just when you have these real life moments and you think this would make a great.
Yeah, a great movie.
A great movie.
I'm calling
have a lot of that.
I'm calling now. Just the last thing on Baby Reindeer. She's going to win Best Actress or Supporting Actress in a miniseries.
Yeah.
And I think he will as well for Emmy at the Emmys.
And an Emmy
For a limited series. Yeah, dude, they're just unbelievable.
Really?
That monologue pushed him over. I was like, he has to win. And her, she's just one of the most.
Yeah.
You got to watch
but
it.
But I just. What I also love is the more we have these incredibly nuanced characters and these moments, and of course, as we said, some of it is fake or dramatized, but a lot of these shows are teaching us sort of how we can interact with each other and how we can understand strangers and what the red flags are to look out for. I mean, that's the one good thing of this kind of true crime docuseries.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, where all these people are like, but I trusted him and he did this and I couldn't believe it. He kept saying this. He kept saying, you know, he's got money, but he, you know, you think, fuck woman. It's
obvious. Exactly. Yeah.
But you just need a couple of these shows to have everyone go, okay, I think I can identify some red flags in life.
Yes.
And they're actually helping society.
No, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else are we enjoying? Anything your side, Cole?
Well, interesting thing yesterday, I got a Crunchyroll subscription again.
Oh, sick.
So watching anime.
Okay. Nice. What is Crunchyroll?
A streaming service for anime. Basically.
It's a great name.
Yeah, it's a great name.
It's like, I love the word crunch. So yes. Like every time I hear it, I'm like, oh.
What is the term? There's a term for that. Onomatopoeia.
It's onomatopoeic.
Yeah,
well,
sound words.
It wouldn't, I don't think crunch sort of would be an onomatopoeic word. It's like a crack
crunch.
Or what's
crunch
snap,
is,
crackle, and pop?
Those Rice Krispies.
No, Rice Krispies characters all onomatopoeic.
Oh, if you love onomatopoeia, Adam West's Batman is for you, man. They're like, Zork, pow, zang.
Fuck, that's so stupid. Every time, usually an Instagram reel pops up from that, and you're like, what the fuck was the show? This is insane.
So how much do you pay?
I think it's actually pretty cheap per month, but I just got the year subscription because it was like $400.
Oh, so 400 Rand for the whole year?
Yeah, so
that's
it was
wild.
Pretty cheap.
With ads or without?
No, without. Without ads.
That's a bargain.
Yeah, dude. I was like, wow, this is fucking cool. And it does simulcasts with Japan. So if any anime is coming out and you want to watch it in Japanese.
That is fucking cool.
So you can see it all live like with the big series.
Without VPN, eh? Local.
Yeah, local.
Oh, sick.
It's really fucking cool.
What does one do? Go to crunchyroll.com.
Yeah, crunchyroll.com.
Yeah.
And,
that's crunchy. That's C-R-U.
So I finally finished watching Attack on Titan.
Oh, so I saw on Letterboxd. Yeah.
Which is like a big deal. It's like 10 years, starting in 2014. And it's like, I think it was the most controversial or like, I don't know, it's famous anime that's been around for a long time.
Yeah, it's been the biggest one for the past like
by far.
5 years.
And the ending
yeah.
was fucking amazing.
Oh, really?
It was insane. It's a full-on tragedy, which is great.
Mm.
But you can't watch that anywhere else, eh? It's not on Netflix or anything.
I think it might be on Netflix.
Some
Attack
parts
on Titan
of it.
There's
was.
A lot of anime on Netflix.
But I must say, we are in the world now where the streaming service and the price that you pay could be better and easier than you trying to assemble it all yourself.
Oh,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's where they know they're winning, where it's like, for that amount of money a month,
yeah,
you don't need to bother with torrents and
100%.
Your own server and all
it's
all there,
and it's
sure.
all there. It's not like you have to even change the file names to get them in order. I've watched a handful of TV shows back in the day, that the ones that never came to South Africa, where you watched the wrong chunk at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you think that that's just a plot device,
yeah.
and you realize
exactly.
that you were watching them in the
out
wrong
of sequence.
Order.
It was the worst thing.
I remember there's Arrested Development. There was one episode. Did you guys ever remember?
I loved Arrested Development. The
so
first
much.
Three seasons.
Yeah. Oh, those are
the fourth one I didn't mess with. Yeah.
There was one episode in season one. There was one was played at the wrong time. So like it plays, and then like there are things happening. Where like I was rewatching with my girlfriend, and she was like, did we miss something? And I'm like, oh, and I remembered. I'm like, shit, this was when it was played out of sequence, like aired out of sequence. So because a lot of the times when they have stuff on Netflix or even on the DVD set, they'll place it according to when it was aired, right?
Yes. Oh, okay.
So, like, it was accidentally done that way. So, like, there was a whole plot point where, like, what the fuck? Like, suddenly people are doing this, and then we've missed an episode. So
Arrested Development has to be one of the smartest TV shows.
Go, 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 go.
Have any of you guys ever seen The Chicken? It was one of the better shows in terms of callback jokes.
Oh, dude.
So that there were certain things that you heard over and over again, and they kept coming back to them. And what Perrin's alluding to is the fact that, okay, the whole show centers around Jason Bateman.
Yeah, it's a and dysfunctional
Jason Bateman's
family, yeah.
character is sort of sitting at the middle of this chaos that this family has.
Yeah.
But over the course of three seasons, each family member reveals some impression of a chicken when they are referring to him as a chicken.
Yeah.
But all of them are so wildly like obscure and different.
Yeah.
Like Will Arnett's is like
yeah, he goes, go, 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 go.
And then like, a kooka kacha, a kooka kacha. Yeah, that's the...
A koolulu.
Yeah, the mom's was, a
the dad was, kooka kacha.
Yeah.
Oh, so
but
good.
But it's so smart because you know they've worked out the whole picture.
Yeah, right.
That's where a callback is so good.
Yeah.
And there's one scene in particular where all the characters presenting their chicken at the same time, and it all comes to
him,
to a full circle moment.
And
he's like, "Have any of you ever seen what a chicken?"
And
looks
his impression's
like?
Terrible as well. He's like, "Cluck cluck cluck cluck." That sounds amazing,
dude. It's so good.
But as silly as this might sound for someone listening, it is a very smart TV show.
There's,
and I just love that. I love when humor is underpinned by it being so smart.
If you loved Succession, you'll love Arrested Development because it's essentially the same like plot.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, like Succession's hilarious as well, but like Arrested Development's the sillier version.
Yeah.
What have you been watching, Ross?
I challenges was a big part of my week. I started Ripley on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, I want to start that. I ran into
Donovan Goliath, who has been a customer staple. here at the video store, and he was like, "You got to watch Ripley." So I started it. It's very much a filmmaker's show.
Yeah, cinematography is also cinematography.
Anyone who loves photography has got an appreciation for.
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
It's a very beautiful show. So the whole thing's in black and white.
Mm.
So it's arty.
Yeah,
so it's not for everyone. So I lost Leslie about three quarters through.
But it's Andrew Scott.
I love Andrew Scott.
Sexy priest.
So much.
So she was like, you can finish this show.
Oh, shame.
Like her way of going like, I'm not interested.
There's
on the other hand, we've been watching Yellowstone.
Oh, sick.
You can both watch it.
And also throwback to the Denim Richards episode. You know, he's Colby in Video Store. In the previous episode. And he's Colby in Yellowstone. So it was so great to have a cast member of Yellowstone
as a guest on the video store. Yeah.
But there's a whole nuanced story, which I get into in the episode, where I didn't watch the show for the longest time. And now I'm watching it because I've had this chat with Denim.
That's very cool.
And it's so cool, like, seeing him. And I get why it was the biggest show in America at one point. And I do see it being a well-made show. But there's a point in Yellowstone where I'm like, I don't like this. Like, I just don't like the characters in the show. It's not that it's badly made.
It's like a slog,
It's not that it's that.
It's not for you, bro.
It's just I don't like the conniving, evil characters. I don't like the fighting. I don't like that.
Shame, you're such a good person, right?
It's so nice.
No,
right?
But
such a sweetheart.
And also, it's a little bit like the baby reindeer conundrum, which is like,
I get you. You don't want to be dragged through
it. It's just getting worse. And I'm like, and why did you fucking kill him? Like, shit.
So you don't like Breaking Bad?
I
never went down the rabbit hole.
Okay,
I respect and know
it's not for you.
I respect and know how good it is as a TV show, but
it's not for you, bro.
It's so funny that there was a point where I bowed out of Yellowstone and Leslie bowed out of Ripley.
Yeah, okay.
So that was funny.
The prequel series for Yellowstone has fucking Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren playing couples on a ranch, and I'm like, I want to watch Harrison Ford be a rancher, a cowboy.
I love Harrison Ford.
He is so
much.
Amazing.
He's
dude.
So funny. He's one of the funniest
he
interviewers.
Is hilarious.
Like his interviews with Conan O'Brien
what
are always
the,
funny.
The Bruno moments.
I can't remember.
I think it's Bruno. The
yeah the Sacha Baron yeah, Cohen yeah, yeah
where he's like we're going to interview Harrison Ford and then he runs off onto the street where Harrison Ford's like just walking I guess and he's like oh like no this. It's Harrison Ford and Harrison's just like fuck off
yeah
and carries on walking
I love him
Shrinking.
So much.
Shrinking is an amazing
I
TV
didn't finish
show
it, but I was enjoying it
it's so good
I need to
good.
Watch the series guys.
It's so good
it's wholesome
it's on Apple TV Plus. It's also Jason Segel
yeah
Harrison Ford they psychologists very quick.
Mm.
And sharp, like it's the same people I think behind Scrubs and
it is yes oh. Yes yes
and so
yeah.
It's that same dialogue where all the characters are so like quippy
yeah
but in such a good way that no one really speaks like that and then you kind of wish that you did
yeah it's like Aaron Sorkin movies where you're like oh man everyone sounds so cool
like, all right guys it was a lovely day
you guys haven't nice asked day. Me the rest of my
oh
yeah
yeah
oh well, did you prepare
in
something
in the get to
dude
know.
I've been waiting I've been like sleepless nights
okay
okay give us a quick rundown
okay, well, okay. No,
well, what
okay.
was what did you watch
Puppy Love was oh no you didn't ask me my four
four questions let's do one every time parents
that's
here.
Exactly what I was
so we did
to
Puppy
say.
Love last time
okay. So when we do our guest episodes we go through the four great loves
yeah
and Perrin is new to our crew here
yeah
so
crew
we've already done the Puppy Love film on. Which is your primary school love.
Yeah.
Now we're over to High School Crush.
High School
so let's,
Crush.
Let's end on this one.
So High School Crush is essentially what movie I was really into in high school.
What came to you, what kind of defines your high school in some shape or form?
It's probably when you started getting into movies.
Okay. All right. This is going to make me sound like a real incel. So incel means incelibate. They choose not to. And they're usually neck beards who are angry at any diversity in any show or movie. Anyways, so the movie that like kicked off that I really wanted to make movies, watch movies, love movies, Taxi Driver.
Okay.
So Scorsese always has a special place in my heart. Yes. He's my favorite filmmaker along with Paul Thomas Anderson, Celine Sciamma, and the Coen brothers. And Taxi Driver was the first movie where I rewatched it like five times in a week. I was obsessed
really?
With it.
Really?
Like,
interesting.
The way
I don't
it was
have that
made,
relationship with it at all.
Yeah, like just the way it was made, performances, just the music. Fucking one of the best scores of the 70s. A jazzy. Oh,
I hate that
so
soundtrack
good.
So much.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's not for me. It's what I want to say. Michael's training me.
Wow.
I can't say I hate it. It's not for me.
Yeah, no, I got through that phase as well. I was like, don't say you hate something. Say, it's not my thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So thanks for not hurting my feelings. But
so
like,
glad.
But yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite Scorsese film, but it's one of my favorites. But like, it got me into like exploring other films. And then
okay.
obviously,
okay.
because Scorsese is the film historian, like, you want to watch everything he recommends or he's, you know, influenced by.
Historian by the fact of what other films he says he loves and
yeah,
and he's just a great lover of the
crazy.
History of film.
And he also, he's a film, I can't remember the word, but preserver? Like
yeah.
Yeah, like he actually, he's one of the guys, I mean, like, so I collect Criterion movies and stuff and he's got a series where it's the World Cinema Project, I think it's called. And he just takes obscure classics, like movies that have been forgotten about or like are sitting rotting in a library in like Uganda.
That deserve to be brought
yeah,
out,
and
yeah.
like he restores it. Like, I mean, he was involved with, like I know he was involved with Spielberg with Lawrence of Arabia with that restoration, even though that wasn't an obscure classic. They still like
but
it
can be anything.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. But speaking of that, the Bioscope played a tiny little part in doing something similar this past weekend.
Yeah.
My lecturer, shout out to Lisa Lowe, approached me and said that she has come across this film and knows this filmmaker. It was 1979, and the film was called Knockout. And it was one of, not. It's very hard to say what literally was, but it was one of the first films to have black South African actors on camera.
Oh, wow. So
and,
it's a literal film history.
Yeah.
That's
and
crazy.
She's like, we've got this film and the bully who made it, you know, he's now old. He lives in Kalani and we want to have a screening. It's got, I think she said Abigail Kubeka. Yeah.
That's so cool.
In it. And how much would it be to hire the Bioscope?
Yeah.
And I sort of said, well, you know, this is the the normal rate for this sort of thing. And she said, okay, well, let's think of how we're going to raise the money. And I was like, Lisa, like, just let's just screen it, man.
Yeah.
Like, like
it's a piece of
if we just get
history.
Everyone to come, I'll make my money off the popcorn. Mm. Like I just want to be a part of putting, you know, giving this a premiere.
Yeah.
So we did it. We did it on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, was it a private thing?
Yeah. The first one will be private just for their invited guests, because I wanted to make some of it available for the public, but it's very hard to control the guest list because you never know who is going to come or who's going to bring people. So this first one was a private screening, but I want to be a part of helping just keep it more alive, you know, so we can have some public screening so that Google will have some juice to sort of list it, or, you know, the synopsis will be up there. There's a very faded poster, and I want to get one of the illustrators we work with Limited Edition to perhaps also give their time to fix this poster so that it can kind of live on and restore that. And I just want to be a part of, like,
that's really cool,
bringing it back to life, which I think was cool.
Sorry, before we like sign off, but there was a guys that I met not too long ago where they go to the archives in Pretoria,
and I've heard about this place.
Yeah, and there are tons of films that were never approved by the apartheid government.
Yeah.
Just sitting there.
Yeah.
What?
In film. Actual, like, the negatives.
The negatives.
Yeah. And they've been going there and they've been watching movies, like, because these guys are like, yeah, just take it. Like, and they've been watching.
It's not very well looked after as a place.
And, yeah. And so
I think, like, everything, you sort of, there's one or two people that are perhaps well-meaning and trying hard, but the rest of it, it's a government institution. So it's
like, our government has failed us. It makes me so angry.
Yeah, dude.
Like,
go out and vote,
why,
folks.
Yeah,
exactly.
Why the fuck aren't the ANC putting more effort into restoring that?
Yeah, so.
And protecting that history.
And it's crazy because I was like asking them, like, why were they not, like, approved or whatever? And they were like, often said, it's almost like in the 60s in Eastern Europe, like Hungary, Czech Republic, Poland, they all had this, the new wave of them. So there'd be the Hungarian new wave and the Polish new wave and stuff. And these guys
were making filmmaking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. These guys were making anti, like,
establishment
movies.
Okay.
And the thing is, the reason why those films traveled is because they did it so covertly, where they hid the messages so well, that these governments were like, well, we want people to know that we are making killer movies. So, like, a lot of these films would go to Cannes and the Oscars and stuff like that, even though they were these fucking very subversive, revolutionary films, you know?
What?
So these guys that I was chatting to, they said a lot of these were Afrikaans films, but they were very anti-establishment films.
Mm.
And, like, they either didn't hide their messages well enough, where the government was like, oh, we're fucking calling it right now. And they said these films, there's these great films sitting there. They're busy translating them right now.
That's and so, like, great. Yeah. Can you connect me with them somehow?
Yeah,
I'll
give you
them
details. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I'd love that. The Bioscopes.
They've
got to play a part in that.
Yeah, they own the DVD, like, little DVD shop on
Greenside,
yeah.
Oh, the Majestic.
Wow. Yeah, it's those guys.
Oh, they're cool. Lovely.
So have
shout
a chat
to
them, yeah.
All right. Thanks for spending this time with us. Our home base, if you didn't know, is thevideostore.co.za, where we've got links to other episodes and links to our social media. We'd love you to chime in on Instagram and on Facebook to let us know what you think about what we've been chatting about. What did you think about Baby Reindeer? And we want to have you come and visit us again soon. Our next episode is going to be this coming Thursday. It's going to be our guest chat. We were going to have Zoe Ramashu pop in. She is an actor, a filmmaker, and a journalist, and she is behind Real Estate Sisters, which has been sitting firmly in the top 10 over on Netflix. It's a film, and we're going to chat all about that and the films that she's loved. All right, so come on back and give us a visit this Thursday. Cool, man. Yeah. All right, guys.
That was lovely.
Thank you for the day. Thank you for the chat.
Cole's legs, love you.
Yeah.
Say goodbye, boys. Not going to see them for a while.
Next week, it's Russell's legs. Oh, yeah.
Chill.
Bye.
TTFN.